by one of my favorite sponsors. That is sunsetlakesebade.com. Left is best. Coupon code gets 20% off. They're fans of the show. They've got some great new products. They just had their big gummy sale. They've got gummy with a little bit of THC in it, but they also have their normal CBD gummies. They have gummies with melatonin to help you sleep. That's been a big addition to my sleep regimen on top of the tinctures. And they've got tinctures from like 6,000 milligrams, 3,000 milligrams, 750 milligrams, and three different flavors, original, citrus, and mint on the tinctures. I know all this by heart because I rotate through. I'm mostly mint and natural, but I like all of them. And of course, on weekends, the coffee with CBD is my weekend brew, but you also can get fudge. You can get the buds and keef and pre-rolls, all sorts of great CBD products. If you've never tried CBD, now is the time to do it. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Left is best gets you 20% off. These guys are movement partners. They have donated thousands of dollars over the past couple of years to things like food pantries and strike funds and innocence projects and Give Directly and immigration refugee resettlement. They also have great business practices now, $20 minimum wage, integrated pest management, so there's no pesticides. Great company all around. And you get third party analysis of everything you buy, so you know exactly what is in there and what works for you. Check it out. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Left is best gets you 20% off. Do that now. And speaking of now, now's the show time.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, September 16th, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Heather Parton, or Digby, from the Uber blog Hullabaloo, and the moderately well-trafficked Salon.com. Also on the program today, with a special report, David Feldman. Meanwhile, special master appointed in Trump's stolen doc slow walk case. Joe Biden's intervention leads to a strike-averting potential deal for railway workers. Senate to delay marriage equality vote till after the election. And Republican governors show their electoral desperation in their anti-immigrant stunts. Senate confirms its 82nd Biden judicial nominee, including a record-breaking number of defense attorneys. Texas delays publication of maternal deaths information till after the election, as Republican anger at Graham's saying the quiet part loud grows. Mortgage rates jump above 6% for the first time since 2008 as the Fed tries to crush workers. Montana defies a court order so that it can continue to harass trans people. U.S. sends another $600 million in military aid to Ukraine. And the Senate Democrats punt on the stock trade ban law until supposedly after November. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. As you can see, it is Casual Friday. Just in case you weren't aware of what day it was in your normal dealings with days, you can tell it's Casual Friday because I have a soft-collared shirt on. And Emma, you just dress like you dress all the time.
Yeah, except when you're remote, sometimes I wear sweatpants, which I'm doing right now.
There you go.
Confession time.
And honestly, you wouldn't care if I wore sweatpants every day. It's just like I have to have some sort of boundaries for myself or else I'll wear sweatpants every day.
There's no problem. You don't have to be I worry about sweatpants.
Because Matt and Bradley do that every day.
I dress up every day.
Or basketball shorts.
I just don't want to be in the habit of wearing sweatpants every day. So I just like set a boundary. If Sam's not in, I'll not wear sweatpants.
There were times I would go in and do Keith Olbermann's show, and he would wear shorts.
Like and
sports
then
sports guy, it makes sense.
But with a suit top.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. Super dapper dresser above the waist, below the waist, not so dapper.
That's very like ahead of his time in the Zoom era of doing work.
Well, it's all talking head, just chest up type of shooting. So there you go.
There you go.
I just want to give these some stats on these judicial nominees before we do anything else. 82nd judicial nominee confirmed in the Senate yesterday.
Big deal.
It's a big deal. These are a lot. The Obama administration confirmed five judges with defense attorney background to the appellate court already, and that's over the course of 8 years. Already, Biden has nominated and gotten seven confirmed on the appellate level. One got voted down on Wednesday, 47-50, because two Democratic senators were not there. I'm not quite sure who they were or why they weren't there. And then Schumer voted against that person so that he would have the ability to bring that nomination back to the Senate. So this is good stuff. 34 public defenders in all out of those 82. The rest are on are not on the appellate level, but the district level, which is also very important. Just the most diversity of judges in terms of, certainly there's some diversity there in terms of just, I think it's like 17 women and maybe 16, folks, of color, but diversity of legal background experience, which is extremely important when it comes to questions of both criminality and in terms of like a law that's going to impact corporations. This is really important stuff. So I just wanted to flag that.
I mean, it dovetails nicely with the story about that we're, you know, maybe going to get into soon about Eileen Cannon, the judge that Trump nominated. And she's in her early 40s, quite young, lifetime appointment. And we're seeing the ramifications of this now. Like the special master is appointed and they're going to try to slow walk this and ensure that the DOJ's probe into Trump is as anemic as possible.
It's not only that they're also slow walking. They're slow walking the resolution of this question, but they're also preventing the DOJ from going forward on the investigation by not allowing them to look at the documents as the special master determines this. And all of this could be, you know, when the FBI goes and gets a warrant to search anybody's house for specific things, they have already made the case to a judge that has satisfied that judge that these documents are owned by the U.S. government, that there are documents that he shouldn't have, sufficiently in which to go forward with the investigation. Obviously, he can't be convicted at that point, But that's what a, if they bring charges on it, that's where he makes these arguments. They are sort of, she is trying to sort of like ostensibly address these things to inhibit the investigation as opposed to be exculpatory for him. And it is incredibly corrupt. And she's being mocked wildly by those in the legal profession. But I mean, it's quite obvious what's going on. But here is Donald Trump on the Hugh Hewitt podcast. Again, we've seen this before, sort of threatening, you know, I guess society if he is held to account.
You know the old saying, a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich if they want to. I'm just asking if there
Pause
is such
for
a
one
prosecutor.
Second. That's not the saying. The saying is a grand jury could indict a ham sandwich. And I'm sure we could go back and find Hugh Hewitt talk about how prosecutors would just indict for no reason whatsoever. I'm sure that happens. And particularly in cases this sensitive, right? Like, this is not, you know, a situation where there's some type of like politically marginalized person that the prosecutor is trying to make hay out of.
Right.
Yeah. But Hugh Hewitt's like, we need Chesa Boudin then to be a prosecutor.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I wonder what Larry Krasner would do with this. All right.
You know the old saying, a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich if they want to. I'm just asking, if there is such a prosecutor and they indict you, would that deter you from running for president again?
I don't think the people of the United States would stand for it. And as you know, if a thing like that happened, I would have no prohibition against running. You know that. You've already.
I do. And that's what I want people to understand. That would not take you out of the arena.
It would not. But I think if it happened, I think you'd have problems in this country, the likes of which perhaps we've never seen before. I don't think the people of the United States would stand for it.
What kind of problems, Mr. President?
I think they'd have big problems. Big problems. I just don't think they'd stand for it. They will not sit still and stand for this ultimate of hoaxes.
Big just... problems. Big problems.
Yeah, you know, you might have a, like, care to clarify? You know, big.
You know,
big,
Gen 6?
Big. Bigger than that.
Let's say, you know, bread boxes? Bigger than a bread box.
Ooh.
I mean, kudos for Hugh Hewitt trying to get his, like, I think we've played two clips of Hugh Hewitt over the past week and a half, and it's the first time I thought he had passed away. And so this is good for him, but and I think he's right. I mean, look, it is difficult to indict a former president. I don't know that we've ever had that happen in this country. Certainly not in the, like, you know, the past 100 years.
That happened.
And so, that would be, yeah, I would imagine it's going to be somewhat problematic, but you know, here's the point. And, well, I'll bring this up with Heather when we talk about this this ruling, because it really is a problem where you have a judge who just is making stuff up, just making stuff up.
But what Trump's trying to do here, right, is like we saw some people say, well, this could be very divisive if this is pursued, and so he's trying to make. Like create a culture of fear about what happens if he is indicted. And so he's trying to manipulate the public perception around this through the press to get people freaked out that his supporters are going to kill people and there's going to be real consequences for anybody that stands in his way. If this actually happens.
Yeah. If we're playing a game of chicken, just know my foot is on the gas. Okay.
But the thing is, he's said this in the past with, with impeachment. I mean, this is not the first time he's issued this type of threat.
No, this is how we got Jan 6th.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. And, this time he's not going to be allowed anywhere near the Capitol. So I don't think it's going to be the same type of problem. But it's going to be interesting to see if when he does get indicted, and what happens if they indict him in Georgia? What are they going to do? They're going to rush the Georgian capital? I mean, that'll be interesting.
And I don't know what they'll do, but it is scary that he has no qualms about stoking that. I mean, and we know that that's who he is, but yeah, I guess we'll see, as we say.
All right. We've got a couple of sponsors on today's program. First is Ritual, which apparently was it's a vitamin company that was founded by a mom who was a little skeptical, apparently, about them and didn't trust the multivitamins that were out there. Well, the thing about Ritual is that makes it really fundamentally different from other vitamin companies is that it was the first to do a traceable supply chain. So basically, you can see where all of your key ingredients come from and why they're there. That is hugely important because a lot of times you get all sorts of junk in your multivitamins. And frankly, there are certain areas where certain stuff that is grown, not necessarily grown in the best of circumstances. You know, you don't want your, you don't want whatever is some element of your vitamin grown in a, you know, a patch of land that used to be filled with arsenic. Plus, their flagship multivitamin has USP verification in a peer-reviewed and published clinical study. All of Ritual's products are vegan, they are all non-GMO, and they are all third-party tested, so you know you can trust what's in there. Ritual's multivitamins were specifically formulated to help fill nutrient gaps in the diet. They have key ingredients like vitamin D3, which is huge for me. As folks know, it's really basically the only flaw in my physiology. And that is that I don't get enough sun, according to my doctor. Vitamin D. And then also omega 3 DHA, which in my understanding is helpful for brain stuff. For me, it's sort of depressing to say this, but I take the over 50 multivitamin because I am substantially over the age of 50. It freaks me out every time I say that. But the Ritual stuff, it's easy on the stomach. They have a delayed capsule. They are a certified B Corporation, which believes doing good for your health means doing good for the planet. And here's the best part for me. On top of all this, they deliver it straight to your door each month. You never have to worry about running out. I cannot tell you prior to Ritual how many times in my life I'm like, I need to take a multivitamin. And then I take a multivitamin, then it runs out, then I forget to do it ever again. And that the rinse and repeat over the course of like 30 years. You can start a vitamin a ritual you can trust. To get started, visit ritual.com/majority today. Get 10% off your first three orders. That's ritual.com/majority to start your new ritual today. Also, today's program sponsored by Aura. I checked it out today. Apparently, my email was compromised and I didn't realize I had an account on, there were two things that one was like called like, I can't even remember what it was like Damn Ciders or something like that. And I went and it doesn't even exist anymore. But I had signed up for that and also House. I guess I didn't even remember signing up for it. But I guess at one point, I saw something I wanted to buy on there. I think it's like trying to upgrade my apartment, stuff or something. I don't know, but, it's that easy with Aura. You've heard me talk about it. It's the app I use to protect my data from hackers, scammers, spammers, phishers, all of it. What are you doing to protect yourself? If the answer is nothing, then you should try Aura. Here's how it works. Aura continuously monitors the dark web, looks for your emails and passwords and social security numbers, sends alerts fast to your phone or email when they find anything. Of course, you can also go on the site and check it all out. Aura also gives you near real-time alerts on suspicious credit inquiries, like if someone's opening up a loan or credit card in your name. They also automatically send requests on your behalf to data brokers to remove your information. This is really cool, actually, particularly for, you know, I don't want people to be able to search me online. It freaks me out a little bit. And it also helps reduce the amount of spam you get and robocalls you receive. They're constantly basically asking these data brokers to remove your emails from their files. They have antivirus software. It blocks malware and viruses before they infect your devices. Look, identity theft is so common. There is a new victim of identity theft in this country every 14 seconds. Causes the average victim over $1,000. Protect your family and yourself from identity theft at aura.com/majority. When you sign up right now, Aura is going to give you 2 weeks free trial with my link. So you can see for yourself how many times Aura finds you or your family members' personal info on the dark web. And if you sign up, let me know in the comments below if your personal information has been compromised. You will not regret checking. Again, that's aura.com/majority to try Aura for free for 14 days and check and see where you might have some liabilities online. All right, going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Heather Parton, or as you may know her, Digby. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to introduce our next guest who has been on the show many times. But before I do that, I got to do this.
A bit of hope in the moon. A bit of hope in the moon should do you. Yeah. How about some hope in the moon? Just rub it on you.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It is time for Digby. Hello, Heather.
I've
How are you?
That. Hello, hello. Thanks for playing the song. I've missed hearing it.
It's been way too long.
It has.
Since you've been
it
on.
Has.
Yeah.
Well, I think she was on and you were not here.
I was on just before he went on vacation. But yeah, it's been a while since you and I have been together on the show, for sure.
This is so sweet to see you guys together.
I know.
I look
adorable.
Forward to Digby's appearances, I got to say.
Of course.
Hey. Thank you. I look forward to being here.
Let's start with the special master. I mean, the irony about this is that this is a a case that is sort of like I would put on in terms of like the criminal probes into Donald Trump. I would put it at the bottom, frankly, on some level, although because we won't really know. And with the one asterisk on that, you know, like inciting a basically a coup, I think is more problematic. The stuff that's happening in New York might be more problematic for him. Georgia trying to directly interfere with the election count, more problematic because it really strikes at the heart fundamentally of you know, the way our country operates.
Right.
This case about the documents, at least at this juncture, is just about the fact that he wouldn't give them back. They're stolen documents. They kept asking him to give them back, and he wouldn't give them back. Like, they didn't even want to bring this case. It's conceivable down the road that they could find, like, hey, wait a second. Where are some of these missing documents? Or who did he sell these to or give them to or show them to? But right now we're not there. However, this is where he's been able to sort of like activate one of his judges. One of my judges finally doing what I told them to do. Right? I mean, it really speaks to who these people he appointed to the bench are.
Well, and this judge is particularly interesting because, first of all, she's completely unqualified to be a federal judge. I mean, she was appointed at the age of 38. Not that there's anything wrong with that if this was a person of great accomplishment at the age of 38. What she was the most important thing, a member of the Federalist Society. And she had worked for Gibson Dunn for a decade or so, just doing corporate work. I mean, nothing particular. She hadn't written any major papers, given any major speeches, done anything would lead anyone to believe that she had a particularly, great set of qualifications for the federal bench. She was put in this particular, and I have to think that, you know, I mean, maybe I'm be turning into a conspiracy theorist myself, but, you know, we're talking about Leonard Leo and Mitch McConnell here. When they appointed her after the election, she was confirmed after the election, and she was confirmed to this particular place in Florida, right? Which is very, you know, which is within the jurisdiction of Mar-a-Lago.
Yep.
I don't know. Maybe it's just a coincidence that they put this completely unqualified Federalist Society, you know, Trump, you know, crony, you know, dupe down there in that particular place in Florida. But let's just say I wouldn't be surprised if it crossed someone's mind that there may be some cases for that Donald Trump might need to put before a friendly judge. And one of the things we do know is that he had tried to put a previous case in front of this friendly judge and he didn't draw her. You know, I mean, there's still some, you know, sense of lottery, I guess, in these situations. He didn't draw her, but he got lucky this time. So saying that about this, you know, just putting that into perspective that who this judge actually is and, you know, the fact that she just happens to be down there in Donald Trump's jurisdiction, you know, how lucky for him. And yes, he is a very lucky guy, so it may just be purely coincidence. But, you know, the fact that they've done this, I mean, all of this is just exposing once again the incredible corruption that grew out of this period of Republican dominance in the Senate and the Trump administration. These people basically packed the federal judiciary, and we were all, you know, all of us who were watching that going, oh my God, you know, they're putting all these incredibly unqualified far right, you know, lawyers onto the federal bench for lifetime appointments. That's terrible. They're going to be, you know, we can't trust them. So what happened? And everybody's, oh, come on. This is the judiciary. It's the courts. You know, let's just relax. It's not going to be that big of a deal. Well, I mean, we've had two things happen here just in the last 6 months. One, of course, the majority on the Supreme Court has gone completely over a cliff and they are no longer even trying to hide it. And they're operating on a, you know, a far right ideological basis, completely throwing out any, the precedent of Roe versus Wade, as we feared. And everybody said, ah, come on, they'll never do it. And now we have this judge, this new brand new judge down there, basically taking a, you know, a meat axe to what we would understand to be a normal federal judge's view of lying to the FBI, stealing government documents, huge national security issues. And this is, you know, she is just behaving as if, you know, this is just a, you know, it's a partisan decision. And the FBI is just a partisan player. Might as well be, oh, I don't know, you know, Elizabeth Warren doing this as far as right. she's concerned. So, I mean, this is just, it's very, very disturbing and kind of, you know, the cynicism that's growing out of all this stuff is really kind of scary. Because, you know, how do you have, you know, we're sitting here supposedly trying to preserve our democracy and going through all of this to on the insurrection and the attempted coup. And, you know, you're going, well, you know, it seems like every corner of our system is corrupted in some way. And it's very, very difficult. You know, I'm worried that we're going to have a whole generation of people here who just are just so even worse cynical than my generation was. I was the Watergate generation, yep. right? And we were pretty cynical, but it was nothing compared to what I'm seeing happen now.
I mean, you bring up, well, there's a couple of good points there. I want to get to that cynicism because I really do think that, you know, the cynicism that came out of the whole Nixon thing, I don't know that our society has really sort of reckoned with what it did to that following generation. I'm not convinced that the whole sort of yuppie revolution wasn't in part a function of that, where it's like, you know, if there's no rules, I'm just going to get mine. And I'm not convinced that that didn't really implicate where with the trajectory of the country, just in terms of the sort of like that cynicism that sort of like mm-hmm. quietly seeped through things. But sort of related to that, our old friend Duncan Black, Atreus, who first coined the phrase "what Digby said" almost 20 years
true.
Ago. Had a very good point on this. And he's like, look, she's corrupt. I mean, it's obvious. It is obvious to any sort of like remotely impartial viewer here that she's corrupt. And you could be talking about the legal profession, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you're not going to find a lawyer who's going to be like, you know, who knows anything about anything to not look at this and go, this is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was basically saying, like, you know, where's the DOJ on this? I think he specifically said, like, if the DOJ, if there's no reaction to this, if there's no guardrails on this judge in this instance, where are the guardrails? I mean, what happens? Like, what's it going to take? What if the Supreme Court says, you know what? Actually, we've looked at the evidence. The election was won by Donald Trump. He really is the president. Like, what, you know, at what point does, you know, on some level, January 6th was a dry run, right? I mean, like, they worked out certain things. On some level, the other side needs a dry run, too. Like, what do you do in reaction to when you see a judge is working in this sort of, like, incredibly rogue fashion? We have no answer for that.
Well, there's one idea that I don't understand, and I agree with this, actually. I mean, I think, look, you know, everybody's, oh, my goodness, you know, we could, somebody says something like, you know, we need to add Supreme Court justices or, you know, make D.C. a state. You know, these are that's part of the conversation that's been going around for the last few years in response to this assault on democracy. And what are we going to do about it? And people just freak out about that. You know, oh, my gosh. No, that's so extreme. You know, how could, and meanwhile, you've got these thoroughly corrupt judges like this one and give Donald Trump attempting a coup. And, you know, yeah. And if people go, oh, my goodness, that's extreme. The difference is that they don't care. And they're going to do it anyway. This is their will to power. The DOJ in this instance has a very, from what I understand, I'm not a lawyer, but I've been, you know, reading a lot about this, as I'm sure you guys have, too, that the DOJ could refile some of this case in D.C.
In D.C.
And go before a much more, you know, needless to say, a, you know, experienced judge who could look at this from the national security perspective, from the, you know, the insane precedents that it's setting. As I saw a defense attorney, Bradley Moss, who's everybody I'm sure has heard of, he talks about these national security cases all the time. He was on TV last night and he's going, look, I'm a defense attorney. If they do this, you better believe I am going to be using this. You know, none of my clients will ever, ever have to face anything because I'm going to say that he's being irreparably harmed by just having an investigation. And they're going to be, you know, I mean, I guess they can just say, oh, well, he's not the president.
Right.
In which case, as everyone points out, well, then we have a king. We have kings. They may not serve the entire time, but they remain kings. Even after office, they are completely immune from any kind of prosecution because, you know, they are treated differently than any other citizen. But the DOJ, to your point, is, you know, they do have certain things in that, you know, I mean, they have certain tools that they can use here to try and combat this that are unusual, yes, but we're dealing with an unusual situation. We have a criminal former president who's running for president again, and a corrupt judge working in tandem to allow him to get away with committing a crime that if any other citizen in the United States, I mean, look, just on the face of it, it's obvious what he did, right? I mean, there's no any kind of controversy about the facts here. Facts are he took the documents. They asked for him, as you say. He didn't give them back.
He gave now, no, he was it was almost worse than that. Because he gave right. he pretended gave he you, gave right. them back.
Right. And then
he
lied.
Pretended to give them back.
And then like, lied to the FBI. Yep. And then you know, and then they came in and found out that he had a whole bunch more, and worse than that, there are a whole bunch of classified documents that are highly classified. Not just the kind of stuff, you know, we've all talked about overclassification over the years.
Yep.
It's true. The government does overclassify a lot of stuff. That is absolutely a fact. But not this stuff. This stuff is about, you know, names and places of people in foreign, you know, in foreign capitals.
Foreign agents. Working, yep.
Foreign agents. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that, or in, I guess, you know, there's at least some evidence that at least one of the documents had to do with nuclear capabilities of a foreign country. I mean, this is the kind of stuff, even I, being naturally suspicious as a good, you know, progressive lefty type of the, you know, the national security apparatus and being suspicious of classification and all of that sort of thing. Even I'm concerned about that kind of stuff. I mean, this is, you know, we do live in a world of the people have, you know, that countries that are adversaries have nuclear weapons and there's a whole lot of dangerous things that happen. And I'm hopeful that there are people in our government who have some integrity that are trying to keep a lid on that stuff. Here you have Donald Trump running around and he, you know, look at what he did with it. I mean, he had kept it in some storage room where the, you know, the caterers were walking through and stuff. I mean, this is nuts. And, you know, we're sitting here observing this and seeing this breakdown. And the Department of Justice, while, you know, yes, everybody said, oh, they wrote an elegant brief. You know, I'm going, I have a feel. And I said this at the time, I'm going, oh, their elegant brief. I'm sure that's going to have a real effect on this judge. She's going to be so overwhelmed, just blown away by how elegant their brief was that she's going to rule in favor of the government here and rule against Donald Trump. Her whole world has just been turned upside down by the elegance of the Department of Justice.
My brief was eleganter.
It was so elegant.
So much more elegant.
Well, it puts like just an aside, like the fact that some of those documents contained information about agents potentially, it puts the pardoning of Scooter Libby a little bit in a different context, right?
Sure does, I mean, it?
It's a precursor. It was almost like that's the dry run for when I do this.
Absolutely. Hey, look how this works. Yeah, good.
I think that genuinely it was the case. I think a lot of that was the case. And Heather, I also know, and you know, talked about this a little bit earlier in the week, but I just want to touch on it briefly before we get to the abortion and immigration stunt. You wrote about the revelations from Berman, who worked in the DOJ or the U.S., the Southern District of Manhattan. And, you know, you and I both remember the U.S. attorney scandal under George W. Bush.
Yeah,
this has been. I mean, it's a good compare and contrast between these Republican administrations because, in many respects, like when the Bush administration politicized the DOJ, it was to really to maintain the power of the Republican Party, and when Trump did it, it was just basically to. For his own personal gain.
Right.
And it's interesting that that gets more pushback on some level than what Bush did, right? I mean, and that's sort of like, there's so much there that both, it covers the theme of like, Republicans have been doing all this bad stuff for many, many years.
Yeah.
And then it's also like, the reason why George W. Bush was not called out by it, because he brought all the Republicans in with him. With Trump, it's like, you got to do my loyalty test before I give you, you guys don't get the friends and family benefits. You get maybe like the friends of the friends and family. Mm-hmm. That's what the Republicans get. But
well, he threatens them too, right? You're a rhino. Yeah, you're nothing but a rhino. You know, you didn't do what I wanted. You know, so they're on the defensive too. Whereas Bush and Cheney, they kept everybody together. And by the way, the next generation, having learned from both of these people, both of these administrations, oh, they're going to put it together beautifully, right? Yep. Because you've got Ron DeSantis over here, Greg Abbott, you know, the whole ugly crew of Trump 2.0. They're not him. It's not personal with them the way it is with Trump. But DeSantis, of course, he's, you know, doing it for his own political ambitions. But he's definitely a team player in this sense. And
Without
he definitely is one who's pushing the entire program, right? And he has one. You know, Trump basically just had a series of ideas that he'd throw out, and he'd get see something on TV and decide that that was something he cared about. You know, I mean, he didn't have any kind of real ideology. Ron DeSantis does.
Bleaching the inside. That's my idea, though. Everybody.
No, nobody's done that.
That's mine. I want the credit for that one.
But, you know, Ron DeSantis certainly does have a full-blown program. It's, you know, it's Orban-esque, right? I mean, we all know what that is now. They're fetting, you know, Viktor Orban at CPAC now. So, you know, this is all part of their new program. And they're going to use all this because they've done it. Now they've really done two trial runs, right? I mean, they did Bush. And you know, maybe you could even go back to Nixon. Reagan, you know, you're seeing them sort of systematically sort of testing the boundaries for the last 50 years, basically. Just kind of, you know, where are the weak spots in the system? Where can I take advantage of this? And there are a lot of weak spots. And we don't seem, I mean, you know, people are sounding the alarm, which I'm glad to hear. I mean, there was a time when it was just, you know, the dirty hippies who were out here screaming
right.
at the, you know, far edges of the political conversation about what was going on. And now it's much more mainstream. But I'm not seeing any sort of sense of, you know, what is our systematic response to this?
Yep.
Well, voting is a good example. I mean, we've got an election coming up here where if they manage to elect all these secretaries of state and they maintain their state legislatures, and you've got a case coming up in the Supreme Court in the next session about the independent state legislature doctrine or theory, they call it, where state legislatures just have, you know, plenary power over elections. There's nothing you can do. The only place that anybody can take a case of any kind of, you know, disagreement about election procedures in a state would be to the Supreme Court. They're the only ones. And everything, the state Supreme Courts have nothing to say about it. None of the elected officials. That's what the independent state legislature theory is. And that's going before the Supreme Court. Now, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm not sitting around going, oh, they'll never do that. I mean, come on. Of course, it's entirely possible that they will do it. I am assuming they will. And I'll be, you know, happily surprised if they don't. So they are empowering, you know, they've been systematically testing it. And now they have seen the weaknesses and they are going for it. And the Democrats, instead of, you know, and here I am again on your show, you know, slamming Democrats, but okay, whatever. But, you know, one of the things that needed to be done in this session, because we knew that there was a good chance they were going to lose control in November of 2022, was to secure, you know, the voting rights and to deal with some of these election weaknesses that we have. And, you know, that was, you know, I get it. I mean, they didn't have the votes, but it seems to me that this would have been something that would have been worth really, really pushing hard, if only for the ability to engage the public on this, because there, it, that might help. and them from you know, voting for some, you know, just going down and voting for the Secretary of State without realizing that what they're voting for is taking away their ability to vote in the next election.
Well, and I would add, it also like the citizenry, the public needs to be made aware of this as a, before they, you know, they're, let me put it this way. They're not going to react in the way that we're going to need people to react. Once this thing, if it actually kicks in, you know, this basically the machine that they're building here, mm-hmm. If it kicks in and they start to basically just fully disenfranchise the entire voting population, that population needs to be educated as to what's going on here.
Exactly.
You know, and it missed an opportunity there. And let me just add to what you were saying in terms of that lineage, you know, just because, you know, well, people who watch this program, vast majority are younger than you and I, Heather. Dick Cheney developed the theory of a unitary executive that he implemented for Bush when he was chief of staff for Nixon.
Right.
John Roberts developed the theory on how to disenfranchise voters under the Voting Rights Act when he was working for Reagan in the 80s and ultimately put into effect when he becomes Supreme Court Chief Justice. Brett Kavanaugh was working on the Ken Starr report, leaking stuff on Clinton, you know, and ultimately gets to sort of like, you know, create the law around it when he's on the Supreme Court. I mean, this is the way they are very good at maintaining like a mission, and they do it through personnel, right? I mean, you know, DeSantis is going to bring in people who have just developed stuff during the Trump administration. I think one of those things was that I can't recall what it was, but that change to civil service that Trump instituted in the waning days of his election, which was basically a dry run in creating a turnkey apparatus for the next Republican president to come in and essentially politicize like 40,000, like 150,000, I think it is, civil service jobs in the government. So that people need to be aware that this is the way that these political machines work. There is institutional memory that is built up that we never hear the names of these people until mm-hmm. they, you know, end up rising to the top 20, 30 mm-hmm. years later, as it were. But so people should be aware of that. But the point you made too about a guy like DeSantis operating in such a way that he has an agenda and certainly I'm sure in terms of the implications for normal people, just as bad as Trump's, maybe worse even, frankly, because I think that's what happened this week with the immigration stuff. I mean, I think they saw, there's no doubt in my mind, DeSantis is, you know, wants to run for president. I wouldn't be surprised if Abbott isn't having some aspirations as well.
Oh,
and
for sure.
They have this, these ideas, they've been working on this, right? They've all been doing sort of stunts like this. I don't think the timing was a coincidence this week. They are doing a big favor for the Republican Party writ large, in addition to doing a favor for themselves. But they're doing a big favor for the Republican Party at large, because the news would be dominated yesterday and today by Lindsey Graham's abortion ban, were it not for this petty stunt where they basically, I think, arguably kidnapped these immigrants who are, you know, in the process of going through the statutory procedures for people who have crossed the border, that most of them had court appointments that they're all trying to figure out, like, how am I going to get to now? Like, I'm all of a sudden in a totally different part of the country.
And they also, like, in terms of how they reportedly lured them onto this plane, they spoke to a woman, NPR did, who said, you're going to have expedited papers and you're going to be able to work here and we're going to get you in front of a judge. Like, they deceived them in mass in order to pull off this stunt. And also, of course, like, did not notify anyone on Martha's Vineyard that this was happening, so it could create ultimate chaos. It's like so many different layers of sickness in this stunt.
I love it too that they sent it to a Republican, another Republican governor.
Oh yeah, that really sticks it to him, right? But I mean, really.
Here's an example of what's going on with Lindsey Graham. I mean, they were so outraged on the right by this. Lindsey Graham had to go on Fox with the Jesse Waters to justify.
Listen, he was chastising him to his face about it. Yeah.
Listen to Matt Walsh. This is the guy who has built his career on transphobia, but also still has retrograde perspectives on other groups of people in the country. He has a little bit of an issue with representation of anybody but white people in movies. Also has some issues with women, but here he is. They have been espousing a ban on abortion in this country for 50 years, and they know that normal people are just, for the most part, horrified. And so when Lindsey Graham comes out and promises to deliver what they've been begging for, they're angry. Play this clip of Matt Walsh.
He's never been a big pro-life advocate in the first place. Like Lindsey Graham? When has he ever showed that he gives a damn about the pro-life cause? In the past, when Republicans have controlled the government, Lindsey Graham wasn't leading the charge to pass pro-life legislation. And there are things that could have been done even when Roe v. Wade was still active. So when they actually have the ability to do something, he doesn't want to do anything. And when the bill can't pass, that's when he's behind it. It's almost like he wants Republicans to lose. That's the conspiracy theory that I would actually subscribe to here. He wants Republicans to lose. This is sabotage. It's the only way to explain it, given who it's coming from, especially. It's one thing if this is coming from someone in Congress who's just been
pause
deeply pro-life,
I'm
a pro-life
like,
activist.
This is sabotage?
Yeah.
But introducing the fundamental piece of legislation that the conservative right and Republican Party have demanded for decades. If anything, it doesn't even go as far as that they want. And he's saying it's sabotage. I mean, they realize how much they, and this is really important for people to understand. Walsh is a religious fundamentalist. The religious fundamentalist movement in this country understands that what they propose to impose on other people is completely an anathema to the vast majority of Americans. And therefore, they have to do it in a very sneaky, undemocratic way, or otherwise it's sabotage. Continue to play. I mean, this is really extraordinary admission.
To explain it, given who it's coming from, especially. It's one thing if this was coming from someone in Congress who's just been deeply pro-life, a pro-life activist for years, and this has been their number one issue. And so, and this is all they talk. This is one of their central things they talk about all the time. They're just so excited about it that they maybe put the cart before the horse a little bit and came out and proposed this right before the midterms. That would be one thing. Now, I'd still say it's a bad political strategy, but then at least I could believe that it's sincere. In this case, I don't even believe that it's sincere.
Wow.
This to me seems like sabotage. Because there are Republicans who want to be the minority party. They want to be the opposition. They want to be in the position of proposing laws that they know cannot pass.
I mean, it's just the critique from Jesse Waters, from Matt Walsh. I mean, Mitch McConnell behind the scenes, we know, is not about what the legislation is. It's about the timing. And he said it right there about the midterms. They understand, as you were saying, Sam, and they've been doing this for decades with the opposition to abortion rights, that you have to hide the ball until it's the exact right moment to strike. They did it with the confirmation hearings of all these Supreme Court justices where they said it's settled law. And they did it in terms of just like they're doing it now with it's states' rights, it's states' rights. Like, Lindsey, you let the cat out of the bag when you weren't supposed to do it. We were supposed to wait until we had power. We were going to lie to people up until that point. And the fact that they're just saying it kind of says everything, in my opinion.
I like how Walsh is pretending to, like, you know, it's not right if he's not sincere about being anti-abortion. incidentally, Donald Trump, not necessarily the most sincere pro-life guy out there. Like, I'd never heard Matt Walsh. If anything, they said the opposite, right? Like, who cares what he thinks? The point is, we want this. But it's fascinating admission, isn't it? That they know that this is, you know, this is radioactive. They're fundamental. And so, like the cavalry, here comes DeSantis and Abbott with, like, just a reminder, we're going to own the libs by, you know, possibly criminally kidnapping or defrauding these immigrants. And then also, like, in the end, all it does is basically show, you know, like, people are actually pretty compassionate about immigrants in some parts of the country, I guess. I mean, it really is. They really feel back-footed to me.
Oh, there is no doubt about it. I think this hit them like a ton of bricks, and I don't think they expected the court to do it. This 15-week ban that Graham proposed this week is what they thought they were going to get. And in fact, DeSantis, you know, I mean, basically all the people like Matt Walsh are, you know, screaming, having screaming fits. DeSantis had put through a 15-week abortion ban. And by the way, he's been very cagey on this issue. He's out front with every culture war thing going on except abortion. And he's been just keeping his mouth shut on that for all the reasons that you just said. This thing is toxic to them. It is toxic to them. In fact, I just read today in the New York Times, the new polling is out in the New York Times on this, and they interviewed a bunch of Republicans, including some men, who are saying, you know, hey, you know, I really don't like the economy. Joe Biden, I don't really feel that great about him. I think he's giving away too much money to people who don't deserve it and blah, blah, blah. But this abortion thing, I can't go along with. Taking away a right, I think even to the ears of some people who are, you know, otherwise, I mean, they're obviously not, you know, anti-abortion zealots, but just people who sort of thought of themselves as kind of, I don't really care. It's not my issue or whatever. This seems to have really just hit people just in very viscerally. There's something about what the court did here. And, you know, I think maybe it had to do with the opinion itself as well, to the extent that anybody's heard it or heard about it or read it. I mean, it was an extreme and completely outrageous Supreme Court opinion, the opinion itself, much less the substance of what they were doing. And it came as a big surprise that the Republicans have been, as you say, they've been doing this, you know, piecemeal over the years. They've trained their people like Matt Walsh to accept lying, right? I mean, this is just, you lie about it because, you know, just go ahead. This is so important. You know, it's genocide. So we're saving all these babies' lives. So whatever you have to do, however underhanded it is, however much dishonest it is, whatever it is you're saying, you know, you can go ahead and do that because the cause is so great. The problem is now that they've actually done something major, they're stuck with the ensuing politics, which I honestly wonder sometimes, and maybe you have some ideas on this, because I've been watching this reaction from people and they're so shocked and so, you know, as you said, they're back-footed. They're just completely, you know, they don't really know where to turn on this issue. They don't know what to do other than try and lie about it. And that's going to be very difficult considering how in the last few years they've been going on the record as more and more and more extreme, thinking they were protected, right? I can say anything. Because, you know, they're not going to overturn it. So I can say that there should be no exceptions for, you know, the life of the mother. You know, there should be no exceptions for rape and incest. These were not normal things up until just the last couple of years that even Republicans didn't go have that as part of their agenda. Suddenly they just went crazy. And I think that, you know, they thought they were protected and they aren't. And now they're having to, you know, deal with the consequences of this issue being decided, and it's completely, you know, it's left them with very, very little to say about it. And I'm, to be honest with you, I'm wondering, do you think it was that they were just cynical all the way and didn't have, you know, just kind of assumed, hey, the court, they know the game. They're not going to go all the way here. Is that what's happening? Or did they really believe somehow, did they convince themselves that the country didn't give a damn about this and that basically it would happen and everybody would just move on and that it was meaningless? I mean, I don't know what they thought here. I mean, they obviously made, this was a very big error, a political error on their part for actually, you know, if they weren't prepared for this happening. And I don't know. I mean, what do you think? I mean, do you think that they just didn't, you know, thought that everybody just shrugged their shoulders and say, hey, that's, you know, that's a shame?
I think it's sort of like a Paul Wolfowitz, you know, we all had our own reasons and they all had their own ideas. And, you know, we weapons of mass destruction are just what we agreed on. I think, I mean, look, John Roberts tried to do what you're talking about. John Roberts wanted the 15-week ban. We're just going to uphold this case and not go all the way to overturn Roe v. Wade. Although you could argue that the 15 weeks would have been an overturning of Roe v. Wade on some level. Casey was too. But nevertheless, he couldn't control them. And I think on some level, like, I think there were people who thought that John Roberts could corral them. And I think there were others who were like, this is great. I mean, I just keep remembering that clip of that woman who testified in front of the Senate. And I can't remember who it was that was asking her questions where they were saying about, you know, I can't remember what the sort of so-called exception was. And she goes, well, in that instance, if the woman's life is in danger, it's not abortion.
Right.
And they're like, what? It is abortion. Abortion is a medical procedure. The statutes don't define what a medical procedure is. It's abortion. And as if like, well, but if God, you know, God sees and comes in and changes what it is, if, you know, like that, I think a huge portion of these people are religious zealots and they have absolutely no idea, about how their stuff is received. No, I think in many instances, they don't care. Because they have God on their side. Let's play this clip from Charlie Kirk. Same situation where he is just enraged that Lindsey Graham actually advocated doing what they, A, have been basically arguing is popular, right? I mean, you never heard them ever say like, well, you know, stopping abortion. They would always like say like, you know, people don't want abortion. I mean, that was their argument. In fact, we heard this from centrist politicians. We heard, and writers, you and I remember Hillary Clinton in 2004 really pushing this idea that the Democrats have to moderate on abortion because it's icky for people, this and that. And now, like, you know, 65% of the population saying like 15-week ban. No, we want people to be able to decide if they need an abortion with their doctor, period, end of story. And here's Charlie Kirk. He's just enraged by this.
Now, I just want to reemphasize this. I am 100% pro-life. I am outspokenly pro-life. I am so pro-life that I'll debate anybody on the topic at any time. The only exception I could possibly imagine is life of the mother. And I will defend that position morally, scientifically, and biologically, and philosophically. But introducing
what it would take, how many percentage points would Charlie Kirk have to be, like, if he believes that abortion is murder, 100% abortion is murder. He is so, so dedicated to that position that he will debate anybody, anytime.
But what he won't do is support like a bill being introduced that would stop murdering potentially thousands and thousands of babies right away.
I mean,
right away. If you think murder, and
well,
you want to sit
stupid,
yeah. Well, right.
Lindsey Graham said he wanted to. Lindsey Graham said this.
I'll be there. for that debate. You're going to make it at 3:30 in the morning because you think I'm going to be tired? I'm going to sleep in the afternoon and be up for that debate. That's how dedicated I am to this.
Maybe he'll debate you, Sam.
They're so into debate lord stuff. Like, Lindsey Graham said he introduced this bill so they could have a debate.
Exactly. Exactly. Lindsey Graham did this because he wanted to stake out that we have a reasonable position on it. That was the agenda. He knew it wasn't going to pass. He wanted it to create conversation. And these people want nothing said about it whatsoever. Play Charlie Kirk.
The mother. And I will defend that position morally, scientifically, and biologically, and philosophically. But introducing a piece of legislation that you do not have the votes for, like not even close to having the votes for, it's not going to pass, is the only rationale is that you want this election to be about abortion? And if it was Josh Hawley, I would say, okay, or Ted Cruz, why is Lindsey Graham, 25 days out from ballots going out, galloping in and saying, we need a federal abortion ban? Really, where have you been, Lindsey Graham? That feels like election interference. And I say this as someone who is so pro-life. I would love a total abortion ban. 15 weeks is not enough. But I'm also not dumb. 25 days out from ballots going out, the Democrats are applauding. Thank you, Lindsey Graham, for making this issue about abortion. They're enthusiastic that Lindsey Graham is now making this all about the one issue Democrats actually can win suburban women on. I wish that wasn't the case. I wish that the country was as pro-life as I am.
I mean, he's not dumb. He knows that the American public disagrees with this. He knows that it's not a winning issue for Republicans. And he also knows when a human fetus when he sees it, except for when it's also a dolphin fetus. But that's another point. He had a little problem with that. But more importantly, I mean, he's being honest here. He's being honest. One of the rare moments, probably, where he knows that. And what's fascinating, too, is what else do they have? What else? Yeah. Do they have? I mean, Donald Trump won the presidency because, and like I said, there's a lot of reasons. Hillary Clinton made some mistakes as a candidate, had a lot of baggage as a candidate, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the things, the most underestimated reason, was because that Merrick Garland seat was empty. And because Donald Trump held up a sheet of paper that said, I got a list from the Heritage Foundation, everybody knew. Everybody, the one thing you could have said about every single person on that list, they are all for overturning Roe v. Wade.
Yep.
And everybody knew. And the, I would say the core of the Republican Party came out. Those evangelical, right-wing evangelicals came out for that one reason right there. That's why they came out, because they wanted this abortion. So, the idea that this wasn't, an electoral motivation factor, like the problem is they caught the car and people realize like they are this crazy. And like, this is the thing that they are starting to realize, like, we're crazy, like in the eyes of the majority, we're crazy. And we got to be a little bit on the DL about this.
Well, they used to know that, there used to be, you always had, they've been doing this for a long time, and you had them, keep this a little ixnay on the incest and exceptions for incest and rape stuff. Don't go there. People don't like that. So just, we'll deal with it down the road. I mean, there was always this sort of implicit thing, which is just, don't push this too far. So on some level, they had to know. That most, the polling's always been pretty consistent, although ever since the decision, the support for Roe versus Wade has grown. The support for abortion rights has grown, which is very interesting to me. Because it's like, what did it take, people? What were you thinking here? But, you know, whatever, I'll take it. But, you know, they had to have realized that this was not a popular position. They did not care because this was working for them. I mean, just on the purely cynical level, if you look at it, you know, you're seeing guys like Kirk and Walsh, who, you know, look, they're operatives essentially, right? I mean, right. They're not sincere evangelical Christians. They're political operatives. And, you know, you can see there where they're sort of recognizing that there's been there's an error in their strategy. I mean, think about it. Think about how much better off they would have been if they had not done what they did with the Supreme Court. And just left that seat, given that seat to, say, Merrick Garland, who isn't in any way not a, you know, a far left kind of, you know, right. rabble rousing, right. swashbuckling progressive. He probably would have been the kind of guy that sort of, you know, a Stephen Breyer type, maybe, you know, I mean, not bad, but
business,
not great.
Business friendly. And
Yeah. He would have been fine. And if they had let that seat go to Merrick Garland, and then they would have had, you know, Kavanaugh, or maybe they wouldn't have Kavanaugh. They'd have put Gorsuch into that seat. I don't know. And then you would have had Amy Coney Barrett. You wouldn't have had this. I mean, there's a monolith in the Supreme Court now that is uncontrollable, clearly, because you can tell by what John Roberts tried to do and couldn't do it. He doesn't have control of that court. It's Justice Alito and Thomas's yep. court. I mean, they are the ones who are running things. And so it's out of their hands now. You know, they overplayed their hand on a lot of this stuff. And I think we're going to see this. Unfortunately for the country, that may not be very good for them politically over time. But for the country, it's an absolute disaster, obviously. Disaster. I mean, it's an yeah. absolute disaster, and as is this abortion ruling. And as you know, I always hesitate because I write about this and I'm thinking – you know, I'm sort of enjoying the fact that, you know, the Democrats have an advantage on the issue and that it's maybe propelling them into maybe holding on to the Congress or at the very least, you know, reducing their losses and, you know, maybe keeping a hold of the Senate, which would be very important. But at the same time, come on, look at the suffering that's happening yep. to people all over the country in these red states. And just this week, West Virginia passed, a draconian yep. abortion law that, you know, very few exceptions. And they're second guessing doctors all over the place saying, well, no, that, you know, that doesn't really qualify as, you know, the life of the mother. We think she ought to wait and see till she's really on death's door. She needs to be gasping and unable to breathe before we're going to accept that. This is the kind of stuff that's happening in these states, especially the sort of antediluvian southern states where they're just really, you know, flying backwards into the 1700s. And so it's awful, and it's awful. And I'm glad that there's an advantage for Democrats politically because it says something about the country that sort of relieves me a little bit, that people haven't completely gone so cynical that they don't care anymore. But the actual consequences of this horrifying decision are just kills me every time I read these stories yep. about people.
It's horrible. And we know we talked about that story about cancer patients not getting treated until they're, you know, sick enough to sufficiently, you know, get outside of legal jeopardy, perhaps. Texas did not report their maternal deaths this year. They're holding off until after the election. I imagine there's a reason for that as well, because mm-hmm. they've been operating under this abortion ban now almost since December. So they may have seen an uptick. We don't know. But Heather, appreciate your time today. Always a pleasure. Folks can check out what you write on a daily basis at Hullabaloo and a couple of times a week at salon.com. Heather Parton Digby, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I always enjoy it. Thanks.
Thanks, Heather.
All right, folks. We're going to take a he's calling in. Is that right? Do I need call into the...
Yeah, he's on the line.
So, okay. Yeah, hold on for 1 second. In.
We
yeah.
could go to a break if you want.
Shoot. I hit the wrong... hold on. Let me see.
Okay.
Do I got him? What's going on there? Yep, there we go. What's the plus 44 calling for? Hold on for a second. Are you there? David? David? David, can you hear me?
David?
David? David? David? David, can you hear me? All right, we're having some problems. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back. All right, we're back. We have a connection. David, can you hear me?
Sam, yeah, I can hear you. Hi.
Okay. You're calling from a plus 44 number. That, if I'm not mistaken, that is, are you out of the country?
Can you lower your voice a little? I'm in a hotel room, and so I need you to, my mother is still sleeping, and I need you to whisper, so if you could just keep it down.
Okay. All right. I will keep her.
No, thank you.
But wait, where are you? And I can't whisper. What?
My mother. Every summer she takes my sister and me to Europe, and we stay in the same hotel room. And my mom's tired. She's been watching, the funeral stuff, so she's exhausted from watching it. So can you keep it down?
Yeah, I can keep it down. But David, wait. First off, wait. How old is your mother?
I don't want to. She would kill me if I talked about that. But she's my sister and I. My older sister and I and my mom were traveling, through Europe. My mom's very generous, and we're staying in the same hotel room.
That seems odd. Like, how big is the hotel room?
And she takes the cot. My mom takes the cot.
Okay.
My sister and I get the queen bed. But you got to keep it down. So, yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I'm in London.
Okay, you're in London.
All right. Not good. My mom was looking forward to seeing the changing of the guard and, seeing London, it's a mob now. The queen died. Did you hear that the queen died?
Yeah, I
did.
I did hear the queen died. Of course I heard the queen died. It was, you almost can't avoid that. Is your mom?
It's a mob. You can't, my mother is barely ambulatory, and the queen, we can't see anything. The traffic is horrible. I complained a little, but I don't want to be, so we're stuck in, we've been watching the TV, so it's,
Okay. Well, I mean, nice. The funeral, my understanding is next week. What is the mood like there?
Well, I've been, talking to people here. I have to whisper. I know.
You keep saying that.
Yeah. The mood is, it's, somber, here in London. I'm in England, by the way. It's London, England.
Yeah, I know. No kidding.
We got that, yeah.
Where else would the...
Oh, is that Emma?
Yeah, hi.
Oh, hi. I can't... Yeah, it's because there's London, Ontario, too, which is in Canada.
Right.
Yeah.
Be odd for your mom to take you and your sister and stay in the same hotel room in London, Ontario.
No, London, England.
I know that, but I think, frankly, it's odd that your mom's doing that anyways with your both.
Why? She's very generous.
I understand. Maybe she could spring for a separate hotel. It's all right. I'm not judging. It's just odd that,
She takes the cot. She's sleeping on the cot. My sister and I have the queen bed. My mother, we're the three musketeers.
Right.
What?
Okay.
Why waste?
No, why waste? No, I got you. That's great.
I don't know why. So, anyway, so it's London, England.
Right.
Not London, Ontario. There are two Londons.
Well, yeah, there's probably more. There's New London in Connecticut.
There's Michael London, who played Little Joe on Bonanza.
That was Landon, I think.
Michael London. He played Little Joe on Little House on the Prairie.
Michael Landon.
Michael London. He played Little Joe on.
It doesn't matter.
Little Joe.
No
on
one
Little Highway
watches
to Heaven.
The show.
You ever watched Little Highway to Heaven?
Watched any of that? That was David Hasselhoff, I think. Like, look, it doesn't matter.
It was Michael London. Michael London.
Okay, it doesn't matter because nobody.
You know what, Emma?
Yeah.
Can you look it up? I'm pretty sure it's Michael London.
Look, you're,
not Michael Landon.
We
can you have Wikipedia?
Yeah, I have it.
David, it doesn't.
Hang on. What
it's Michael Landon. It's Michael Landon.
Michael Landon. It's Michael Landon.
It's Michael Landon.
Okay. All right. No need to. Thank you. See, I have a little jet lag.
No, I'm sorry for raising my voice.
I'm here in Landon, England, and the funeral is next week. So.
Yeah, that's what I just said. The funeral's next week. And so how is it over there? Are people? I mean,
well, you know, I haven't been outside. My mother is barely ambulatory, and so we talked to the people who clean up. It's hard for Americans to understand what Queen Elizabeth meant to the British people. Are you familiar with The Crown? You know, Netflix.
Yeah,
The Crown.
I am. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It's not really my cup of tea.
No, it's a television show, you moron.
It's a television show. It's on Netflix. What are you getting? It's a little bit.
You just called it a cup of tea. It's a television show. It's not a cup of tea.
That's a saying.
Christ, I can't believe this. I didn't want to do. If you were here in Landon, seeing what this nation is going through, maybe you wouldn't be so flippant, Sam.
Yeah.
Comparing the Queen of England to a cup of tea. I don't know. It's why you're an ugly American.
Compare the Queen to a cup of tea. I don't even know what that would be.
Emma, does he listen? Does he listen to himself?
I mean, David,
I don't want to triangulate here, but
I don't think that he compared the Queen to a cup of tea.
Okay, the two of you are gaslighting me. Play it back. I just said, do you watch The Crown? And Sam said something along the lines of, and I didn't write it down, but he said something about wanting to teabag the Queen.
No, I did not. No, I did not.
I'm on vacation. I'm with my mother. And you say, oh, you're in London. Come on the show. I didn't write that. You said something. Play it back. I said, do you watch The Crown? And you said something about the Windsor bosom and wanting to teabag the Queen.
Windsor bosom? I don't even know. What are you talking about? I don't even know what the Windsor bosom is.
Okay. You're gaslight. This is like, I don't need this right now. I'm
going to
wake my mother.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
You're gaslighting me. You're playing dumb.
I'm not playing dumb.
You're what?
I am not playing dumb.
Yeah, you don't need to play dumb. Just be your. That's how I would direct you. Just be yourself.
That's great.
I would cast you in a pilot. I would say, Sam, just be yourself. Don't play dumb. Just be yourself. Because you know what? I don't want to wake my mother.
David, I get it. All right,
you're dumb.
You're with your parents. I've been there. It makes you a little tense. You're on vacation, but I don't know why you're getting. You're incredibly hostile. I'm asking you about the funeral. You're in London, and now you're talking about the Windsor bosom. I don't even know what that is.
The Windsor bosom. It's the Windsor bosom. Everybody knows about the Windsor. That's why she wears a crown, you idiot. So the eyes are drawn upwards away from the Windsor bosom. You're not allowed to see the Windsor bosom. It's like, I don't know, the Ark of the Covenant from Indiana Jones. You know, if you stare too long, your face contorts, your eyes bulge, your ears flip upwards. That's why Prince Charles looks the way he does. She breastfed him.
What?
A Windsor bosom.
There's no such thing as a Windsor bosom, David. Come on.
The Windsor bosom.
You're saying that the Queen's breasts are yes. referred to as the Windsor bosom, and it's like the Ark of the Covenant, and that Prince Charles got all had that look on his face because as a child he was breastfed from the Windsor bosom.
He was breastfed. Yes, it's like the Ark. I just said that you can't, if you're in the presence of Her Majesty. This is why it's a closed coffin. Nobody's allowed to see the Windsor bosom. If your eyes accidentally, bear witness to her, I want to put this, her heaving décolletage. Am I being too spicy here? Calling it a,
I don't know what you're being, to be honest with you.
If the reason it's a closed coffin and it's draped is because you cannot bear witness to her heaving, pulsating décolletage with those ripples of girl power. You can't take your eyes off of it. It's like a car crash. It's just,
You're saying the Windsor bosom is like a car crash?
Yes. You can't take your eyes off it. You shouldn't look, but you do, and you can't unsee it.
Hey, David, I don't know what's going on. If it's like this has to do with you traveling with your mom, with all due respect, there's no such thing as the Windsor bosom. That doesn't.
There's the Windsor bosom.
People can Google it. It doesn't exist.
Google the Windsor bosom.
Yeah, and I can assure you, it's not compared to a car crash.
It's compared to a car crash. It's exact. The Windsor bosom. Go read Princess Di's death certificate. Can you look it up, Emma? Go look up Princess Di's death certificate.
Under
cause of death.
Yes.
Under cause of death. It says Windsor bosom.
No, like, no. What? She died in a car crash, David.
But the queen was
caused
not there.
By the Windsor
what are you
talking,
David? I think maybe we need to do this another time. maybe you're not feeling well.
I feel fine. I just don't know why you're. I don't know. I don't know why the two of you
were. You're making stuff up, David, and you're acting odd.
Yeah, you're acting odd. You're the weirdo, not me.
I'm not.
You're
sure.
Weird.
Okay.
I'm telling you the truth. Princess Di, by the way, is dead. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I didn't want to ruin the new season of The Crown for you, but she dies. So.
All right. Great.
I didn't want to ruin your cup of tea. But Princess Di is dead.
Yeah. All right. Princess Di is dead. There you go.
Yeah. That's... Princess. You know what's weird about Princess? Do you mind if I just jotted something down here. You know what's weird is that her last name was Di, and she died. But that word, that's kind of...
I mean...
It's not funny. I was thinking of doing it in my act. Like, hey.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is the Princess Di is not her... That Di is not her last name.
It was her maiden name.
No. Her name is Diane. That's her first name.
No.
Princess Diane.
No. You're
ignorant. Diana, I guess.
Diana. It
really was.
No. She married Charles. It became Windsor, but then after the divorce, she went back to being Princess Di. Anyway.
No.
Spoiler alert. She's dead.
Yes. No, I think everybody
knows. I
don't
want to ruin. What?
Everybody knows she's dead. She did not die.
I
don't want
to ruin your cup of tea. I know you're looking forward to watching Netflix.
I'm not.
And I want to ruin your cup of tea.
But I can assure you, even on the show, the cause of her death was not officially listed as the Windsor bosom. None of that.
You want to stay a child? You know what? You're a child, and you want to stay a child and not believe the queen had Princess Di killed. You go right ahead, Sam. Just Peter Pan your life. Just never grow up, Peter Pan. I'm going to start calling you Peter Pan.
I was actually a grown person when she died, and it was not from the Windsor bosom. None of what you're talking about is true. Let's just talk about the funeral. I saw a report that said that was in the Jacobin that said that people are being arrested just for criticizing the monarchy. Let's talk about that or something.
About attacking the
whatever.
Monarchy.
Let's talk about the funeral. Let's not talk about the queen's
wait, hang on. You know
bosom.
To disrespect just the royal family. What is 150,000 Mau Maus rounded up and placed in a concentration camp, raped and castrated. I mean, we're going to hold that? You're going to hold England accountable for dividing India into Muslims and Hindu and creating Pakistan and Kashmir, genocide and,
yeah,
and dipping bullets in pork before they shoot at Muslims? I mean, you're going to hold England accountable for what happened in Africa? I mean, go ahead, Barbados, Bermuda. I mean, you're like my third wife. Just coiled like a snake in the grass, waiting for me to make a mistake and then jumping on me.
I mean, everything you outlined is the almost the only true things that you've been talking about.
Yeah, well, so what are you going to do? You're going to just sit back, you know, piss into the tent instead of be in the tent and rubbing it all over your body? I'd rather be in the tent rubbing it all over my body than be outside the tent pissing into it.
I got to be totally honest with you. I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, I know the metaphor,
yeah.
Pissing into the tent, pissing out of the tent, but
you're
rubbing
ignorant.
Your urine all you're over ignorant. You, I just, you've lost me a little bit. I'm just asking you about the funeral, okay? That's all. You're being an idiot. You're being very odd. Are you drunk?
Hello?
David? Did he hang up on me?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, you're waking my mother.
No, I'm not waking your mother. I don't know why you didn't step out to do this or do this when your mom wasn't taking a nap. I don't know why you're with your mom. I don't know what you're talking about.
Because I
asked you to talk about the funeral,
and
then you're
the
going off about urinating on
because
yourself.
Of the COVID. You want me to give my mother COVID? I'm not leaving the hotel room.
Why did you go there in the first place? You would have been better off going to London, Ontario.
We're in London, England. Okay, that's where my mother is very generous. She just died, and my sister and I took her. You know, collecting the social security checks, and we have to be in another country, so the social security checks keep coming. And she's very generous and having a fantastic time, and you're ruining it for me.
Well, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I want to know about the funeral. If you have nothing to talk about,
I think you and Emma. And don't take this the wrong way. I think you get your news from the corporate controlled media, and you need to broaden your horizons. And did you listen to Tulsi Gabbard on the Jimmy Dore show live from Comic-Con last week? See, if you listen to Jimmy Dore live from Comic-Con with Tulsi Gabbard, you would know these things. But
I do not listen to Tulsi Gabbard. I did not realize that they were
at Comic-Con.
Yeah, I
wouldn't think so. She's a combat veteran, right? But you don't listen to her because she's a combat. Why do you hate our troops? Why do you hate the troops, Sam?
I mean, there's reasons, but I don't particularly hate the troops. I don't
like You think Tulsi. They're stupid. You think they're stupid. You think Tulsi Gabbard is stupid.
I don't know if she's stupid, but what she said.
You think the troops are stupid.
I don't think
the troops are stupid.
I don't think
you think the troops are stupid.
I do not think the troops are stupid.
You just said, play it back. You just said Tulsi Gabbard is stupid because she served in the military.
I did not say
you
that.
You just said that. You
nope,
just said
I did
that.
Not. I never said
Go
that.
Back and listen.
Nope.
Play it back. Play it back. You just said it. You just said 9/11 was the best thing ever to happen to America because we had it coming. You
nope.
just said that.
Did not say that.
I just heard. Don't gaslight me. You just said 9/11 was the best thing ever to happen to America because we had it coming. You just, Emma, didn't he just say that?
No, David, he did not just say that.
Okay,
he did
so
not.
Okay,
no, you're
it.
Gaslighting
okay,
us.
So the two of you. I get it. Okay, I get it. I get it. Okay.
Well,
you're just hearing things. I don't know what, I don't understand what you're doing.
You know what, Emma, you are jealous of Jimmy Dore and Sam is jealous of his protege, Jackson Hinkle. Mm. And the two of you are seething. You can't handle it because Tucker Carlson had Jackson Hinkle on his show. And the two of you are going, well, why didn't Why didn't Tucker ask us to be?
I know why Tucker didn't add it, but yes, we actually saw Jackson Hinkle on Tucker Carlson. That is, it was.
Right. And it's eating you up alive because he's doing what you do, and Tucker Carlson would rather have Jackson Hinkle than the two of you. And I love Jackson Hinkle. He's a Marxist who gives stock tips, and, you know, he's. You're jealous, man. You're jealous of Jackson Hinkle.
I would not take stock tips from him. No, I would not do that either.
Because he's only 21.
I have no idea how old he is. I wouldn't be surprised. I know.
I thought he was 22. If you listen to him, you think that's a 22-year-old. No, Jackson Hinkle is only 21. He's so young, but so wise. So wise. And it eats you up. He says things, his insight that you don't. Did you know that he's a socialist who hates George Soros? You know that?
He's a what?
He's a socialist who hates George Soros.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he calls himself a socialist. Doesn't he also sell gold?
He's brilliant. He's a communist socialist who hates George Soros.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was watching him on Tucker Carlson. See, I can handle other people's success, unlike you.
Right.
I can watch someone thriving and say, you go ahead, make room for the younger people. And he was saying that George Soros is hypnotizing the world. Mm. I didn't know that.
Mm.
And he's against helping that comedian Zelensky in Ukraine. He said, and this is really wise. He said to Tucker Carlson, he says, why are we giving money to Ukraine when we need it back here in America?
Yeah, I know.
I went, wow, Jackson, for a 21-year-old. Wow.
I know who Hinkle is.
Jackson Hinkle.
I had him on the show. We sort of debated the fact that he doesn't like the fact that I'm.
Why would you debate Jackson Hinkle? Well, he's on our side. He's a socialist.
Well, he really wanted to, and I don't think
he's a socialist.
He's really on our side. I don't know what that really means, but I don't think so.
Okay. You know that I'm a lefty from way back, right?
Yes, we know, actually, yeah. I do know that, yeah.
Okay, and I can spot a lefty from the future, and that Jackson Hinkle, I'm telling you, he is a socialist. And he wants to focus on America, not Ukraine. Go watch him on My Mother's Stirring. Hang on for once. I'll keep it down. He's a socialist who wants to focus on America, not Ukraine. And,
right.
he says America first. Right. Have you ever heard that before?
I have heard that before, yeah. America first.
Yeah. Not Ukraine.
Right.
Right? Nothing wrong with a little nationalism, Sam. Okay, I understand nationalism is a freighted term, but there's nothing wrong with a little patriotism, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with being a national socialist, Sam, like Mr. Hinkle.
Right, national. Where have I heard that before?
From Jackson Hinkle with Tucker Carlson. Why should the right wing own patriotism? Right. Why can't we be nationalists? Why can't we be national socialists?
I think a lot of people argue
who support unions.
Socialism is supposed to be international in many respects, is one of the things.
Supports unions. He supports, you know what he says? He loves the German model where 40% of every German corporation has union representation sitting on the board of directors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Elizabeth Warren has talked about it.
Yeah, that's true.
What's wrong with loving this country, supporting German workers, right? Modeling loving our country, loving. He's a national socialist, German workers kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And we should let him. I don't know. We should support this guy. I know he ran for office, and I think it was in San Clemente, right?
I think so. Local office, maybe. I'm not quite sure.
Well, I hope the guy is young, and I hope he starts, like a National Socialist German Workers Party that we can get on board. I mean, he's a socialist, you know?
Right, 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 right. Yeah. You would be very excited for that. I don't know. I don't.
And he hates George, and he hates George Soros.
Right.
That's like the added benefit is he hates George Soros and that Zelensky guy. And until he started crapping on Zelensky and George Soros, I began to realize, hey, they look alike.
Hmm.
Right. Have you ever, like, they sound alike? Did you ever notice that George Soros and that Zelensky guy kind of, you know, they have something in common. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I hate them both.
Yeah. Well, they do have something in common. I mean, they're both Jewish.
I hate them.
But they're not. They don't look like each other. I think like they're 50 years apart in age.
They're like father and son. They look alike.
They don't.
Sound alike.
No, they're just, they're both Jewish. That's it.
Who's Jewish?
Well, Soros is Jewish and Zelensky's Jewish. They're both Jewish. Jackson Hinkle railed on Tucker Carlson. They're both Jewish, and he claimed that there was some type of, like, you know, international cabal.
Wait.
That is, orchestrated.
George Soros? Wait. Because I don't pay attention to this thing the way you do. You're saying George Soros is Jewish?
Yeah.
With a rat face? He's a Jew?
I'm sorry.
I don't...
With a what?
Interesting. He has a kind of rat face on him. What about Zelensky?
Zelensky is also Jewish, but I don't know about like what you're saying.
The short guy running around trying to start a war?
Well, he didn't really try and start a war. I mean, the country was invaded by Russia.
No, you're saying the guy who tricked Putin into invading Ukraine the way Mika Zabrinsky's father tricked the Russians into invading Afghanistan to create a quagmire so the
quagmire?
Empire would... Yeah, you're saying that this rat-faced Zelensky hypnotized the world and Putin and tricked him into invading Ukraine? And you're saying...
No.
Because, you know, Jackson Hinkle, I listened to Jackson. He never mentioned that Zelensky is Jewish, and I just know from Jackson Hinkle that George Soros hypnotized the world and profits off wars and starts all wars and is in bed with the military-industrial complex, but I didn't know that they were Jewish.
Well, I mean, they're Jewish. They're Jewish. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay, I don't pay attention to those kind of things. I just listen to Jackson Hinkle. Is Jackson Hinkle Jewish?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
He sells gold on the show.
David.
Are you sure he's not Jewish?
David, he's not Jewish. I don't know what, like, what you're suggesting. He sells gold on his show. I mean, I don't know if you are aware of this, but, there's been a lot more anti-Semitism as of late, in the past several years, but everything you're trafficking in, is a little bit anti-Semitic tropes, like, you know, George Soros is
I don't pay attention to that kind of stuff.
Well, you should know. I mean, I don't know how you got by your however old you are without being aware that, you know, Soros is often used as a sort of a surrogate for, you know, Jewish critique. I mean, you could critique the guy.
I don't care that George Soros
is like creating all wars and is a puppet master.
Zelensky is tied into it. That I object to.
Jews sell gold. That's not, I don't know where you're picking all this stuff up from.
No, I have no problem with, I agree with you that George Soros controls the world economy with the Rothschilds and creates all wars, and that Zelensky, who's got offshore accounts, I think it was the Panama Papers, he's been in cahoots with George Soros. They both share a grandfather who was, I think, Adolf Hitler's uncle. I think both Soros and Zelensky are descendants of Adolf Hitler's Jewish uncle. But I don't pay attention to your, you know, people's religion. I just like Jackson. I'm watching Jackson Hinkle, and I don't hate George Soros and Zelensky. If you say they're Jewish, I don't. But you know, these rat faced, money hungry, war mongering vermin that Jackson Hinkle speaks about. I hate them because they're vermin, and they're going to breed with our children. And I just think that's what I don't hate them because they're. I don't even
George Soros. I don't know who's going to breed with your kids. I'm sorry.
I'm worried George Soros is going to fornicate with my son or daughter.
I'm quite sure that's not going to happen. I would also probably be willing Zelensky, to bet that Zelensky's never Zelensky, going to meet anyone in your family. I would say like none of that is going to happen.
He controls the media, Zelensky Ukraine. And, I mean, you know, I'm just worried.
Ukraine.
Anyway,
there's a war going on there. Listen, I don't know that.
Are you sure hang on for 1 second. Are you sure Jackson Hinkle, who I watch every night and I'm a subscriber, are you sure he's not Jewish? Can you put a picture? Can we look at a picture of, do you have one? Because I'm telling you, I don't pay attention to these things. I minored in phrenology at community college. I had a minor in phrenology, skull shapes, bumps on the head.
Okay.
But are you sure Jackson Hinkle?
I'm not. I'm not sure, but I don't believe he is Jewish.
Are you sure? Because I met him once, and I tricked him into a scalp massage, and I felt the bumps on his head, and I went, Jew.
Wait, are you saying like there's horns that Jews have horns on their heads?
It's phrenology, you child. Forget it, Peter Pan. Don't grow up. But I gave Jackson Hinkle a scalp massage, and while he was relaxed, I read the bumps on Jackson Hinkle's skull. And again, it's been a couple of years since I studied phrenology at Bergen Community College, but my fingertips read Jew. Are you sure he's not a Jew?
He's not a Jew. And
do you have a picture of him?
I don't know. Do we have a? Can we get a picture of him?
Are you absolutely positive? Jackson Hinkle?
Yeah, that's not.
He's Jewish.
No,
he's a Jew. He's a Jew. He'll do anything. He'll say anything and do anything for money. He's a Jew. Jackson Hinkle will say and do anything for money. He is a Jew. And the bumps, I have the bumps on his head to prove it, that Jackson Hinkle is a Jew. So how could he be anti-Semitic?
I think we probably got to wrap this up because I don't want to wake up your mom. That's what it's like. What? Your mom's probably stirring by now, right? So, David, this has been really edifying. And
all right. Are you a Jew, Sam?
Yes, I am a Jew, David. My last name is Cedar. It's like literally the Seder.
Wood.
Well, it's S E D E R.
Cedar Wood.
No.
What?
No. Seder. It's spelled like Seder. It's a Jew. You're Jewish.
I didn't know you were Jewish. I don't pay attention to those kind of things. But you do seem kind of rich and controlling. Maybe that's why Jackson Hinkle doesn't like you.
David, it has been a real interesting conversation. I want to say goodbye to you now. And best of luck in London, the hotel room.
Thank you.
All right.
Heil Hinkle. Heil Hinkle.
I'm sorry. Excuse me? What did you say?
Nothing. I just said Jews will not replace us.
Oh.
Oh, all right. That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Heil Hinkle.
All right,
Heil
David.
Hinkle.
I appreciate the call. That was
something.
I don't know what's going on with David right now. That seems like he's going through something.
Media diet, you know.
Yeah.
Influence the person.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we talk about the radicalization that happens with YouTube. Well.
Yeah, no Bing results for Windsor Bosom either.
No, not even Urban Dictionary.
Well, that's because the tech giants are suppressing the real news. Folks, A, apologies. B, you could support this show by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials, you get the fun half as well. Jointhemajorityreport.com, help the show survive and thrive. I don't know if we're going to survive after that. Wow. That was... don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Also, the AM Quickie. Sign up for that bad boy. And we have almost, I think have we hit 7,000 on the Discord? I think we're there. Check it out, folks. MajorityDiscord.com. And we will put all the ads and whatnot links in the YouTube and podcast description. Emma, you guys did a surprise stream last night.
Well, I think we're probably going to do this going forward just to give our picks for the weekend. But ESPN will now be on Mondays. We'll be recapping the Whoa. NFL season. Yeah, but it just makes more sense. But, you know, on ESPN OT from yesterday, Bradley and I gave our picks for the weekend. We talked a bit about the Thursday night game, which has happened now. And then we also talked about the Phoenix Suns owner and what's going on with his suspension in terms of like how light it was and some of the reaction, as well as Brett Favre stealing millions of dollars from poor people in Mississippi. So check that out. And you can also go on any Spotify or Apple, listen to us in podcast form, and give us 5-star review. I haven't said that yet. I'd really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Give good reviews. That's really important at the beginning of the show. I mean, you can give the Majority Report, too, but it's very important when the show is really just taking off to get yes. it out there.
I just want to give credit to our friend Zeke Gonzalez for the ESPN OT idea.
Suggestion
for the name. We're going to go with that for our Thursday shows.
Thank you, Zeke.
YouTube.com/ESPN show.
Brett Favre, like, really did steal them. Like, he has some serious criminal liability, it seems like.
No, the FBI is looking into him, and the text that the Mississippi local paper I'm blanking on it found, or him just saying
Mississippi
Free Press saying,
can we get this out of the
no, should am I is anyone going to know if I do the crime? Yeah, like, that's like, essentially what it is. He's a dumbass.
Yeah,
but
will this take any public exposure? And the person is like, let me ask, what was the governor?
Phil Bryan.
And we'll chit chat with him. And Brett Favre was like, thank you, I really needed that assurance.
he's a huge weight off my shoulders.
So, I mean, he's a real scumbag, but like, there needs to, he needs to get his gold jacket taken away, in my opinion.
I don't know how people, like, how do you, like, operate in that way? I just don't understand it.
Well,
your daughter wants a volleyball stadium at her new college.
So. I mean, this is the guy that golfs with Trump. Like,
of all the freaking reasons, too. It's like,
but he got paid $1.1 million to promote the volleyball stadium. So
that's
like
hard work. Have you ever promoted a volleyball stadium?
Yeah, it's. I mean, come on, right? Hype it up. I mean, he needs his pom poms.
You don't have a lot to work with necessarily. Like, this is the best volleyball stadium that we've ever had.
Like, you need to get like a big red ribbon and a big giant pair of scissors too. That's not easy.
And I'm sorry, it was the Mississippi Today, not the Mississippi Free Press this time. Yeah. But sorry about that.
Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekian media universe?
For Left Reckoning patrons this weekend on Sunday, we're going to release a conversation with Thomas Kennedy, an activist, journalist down in Florida about Ron DeSantis, sort of a DeSantis overview, including this immigrant thing, the election police, and that sort of stuff. So that's this weekend, patreon.com/Left Reckoning.
All right, going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. We're a little bit late today. Not too late for a Friday. Probably no calls, but we will take your IMs. See you in the fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on? It's nuts. Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
You.
What is up, everyone? Nomi Key.
You did it. Let's go, Brandon.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this, 7-8?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello? Is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go tell
you. Libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3501. 1/2. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion. Sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this. Poop.
You call it satire. Sam goes, satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick, so screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.